We have a guest. I guess do our introductions first, I guess. Jim Kaus, board.
Janice Van Wyhee on the board.
John Racknelli, board member.
Robert Small, a private citizen.
Okay. Brandon Erickson, board member.
Lindy Wally, Park and Trust Planner.
Amy Arnold, the Parks Office Assistant.
I'm Justin Morgan, I'm the Capital Program Specialist.
Right.
Jessica.
Hello, Jessica. Oh, Jessica Barksdale, a board Hello. Member.
Ross is on.
Ross Hoover is the Parks and Nature Division Manager.
Hi, everyone. Good to see you.
Kevin is on. Lance Manager.
Okay. David's here sometimes.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. The previous minutes, can we get rid of those quick?
They're not on here to approve.
So our public comment is from Brian Lind.
David comes back. I believe he can speak more to that.
Yes, okay.
This John has something to contribute.
Do you have a public comment to make?
Yeah. Can I just shoot a hand up?
Sure.
I'm going to ask what the property is over the fence so I can write it down. Yeah. About the property parcel.
It's on the top.
The address. I was going to just Google it.
Yeah. Well, 4316.
Not
these,
131st.
Okay. I'll be able to
pull it up.
Yeah.
What was the address for him?
4316 Northeast 131st Street.
He would like to do public comments. That's his handout.
I think we've got everybody here. Go ahead.
Is Manager Hoover on there?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he's on.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Manager Hoover, board members. Is there any county staff here?
Oh, yeah.
Good afternoon, county staff. I don't know anyone. Anyway, 2017, I approached then Manager Bill Bjerke about establishing a neighborhood park on my property. At that time, Parks was very interested, and we did some preliminary discussions. That was all for nothing because, as you can see by the handout, my property is pretty much surrounded by subdivisions. And the county, the county works, the hierarchy is the county road has the authority. That was on my end. That was dropped. Then some of the neighbors HOAs they combined the forces and approached the county. And this took about 2 years. And then COVID happened. I'm back here today just to run this by again to see if there's any there. I'm the steward. Their family doesn't want any subdivisions on the property. I'm going to run it by you folks, and then we'll go other routes to see what we can do about preserving the open space and the character of the property. That's pretty much what I have to say.
You've got 5 acres there?
Yes, sir.
How many acres of the property?
Five acres.
Okay, thank you.
See, the reason you notice on the left-hand side of the parcel, on the right-hand side of the parcel.
Oh, I see the note there.
There's two of those. There's two of the what the streets did end on my property. Mm-hmm. And that's what the county calls streets or roads of nowhere. they're prevalent in the county. Anyway, so the roads department has aspirations to put streets on my property to accomplish their circulation ideas. To most of my neighbors, that's secondary to just having a park.
Yeah, it's just North of Grand.
Robert, Robert, did I catch, is that your name? I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Yeah. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for this information. I saw there was a handout. If it's possible to have you email that content to me, that would be most helpful.
What did he say?
I want you to email your handout to him if you could.
We'll email it.
We'll get it to you.
You got to do that. You know, there's several there's several experts. Gotcha. Yeah. That'll be taken care of by staff or someone.
And you're at Teal, the boundary, and it's just north of Grady Park neighborhood park.
How big is that park? That's to the south.
5 acres.
It's a 5 acre total park. Okay.
See, it's kind of ideally located because of that equal distance between Greyhawk and the larger park to the south. I think there's a 40 acres or so in there. But that park to the south, that park to this correction, park to the north, next to the Pleasant Valley School. My neighbors, many of them say that park is unusable because it's so steep.
That one up there?
Yes.
That's Pleasant Valley Park?
Yes. Yes.
And then over here, the large one, this shows a layer of green, which are parklands. And over here in the bottom right, that's Curtin Creek Community Park, which is one we're just starting to develop.
My neighborhood has recently been a subdivision in my neighborhood, another one. And I just thought about that. Now, all those home buyers, they indirectly pay a park impact fee. Mm-hmm. What are they getting for their impact fee? They aren't getting anything mobile. There's nothing, mm-hmm. there's not a neighborhood park. Anyway, there's upwards of 200 homes within a quarter mile of my property. And those folks don't have any access to a neighborhood park. But that's secondary to the fact that the county wants to put housing on my property.
Good. We deal with road modifications frequently when we're going through the land use approval process. We're doing that right now on a part where the road department wants to have three roads go through one of our parcels. And so we just work through the road modification process with the transportation department. And there are ways to work around that. The road to the east of your property, Northeast 172nd Court, is an easy one to request a modification for because the road to the west is already a cul-de-sac. So effectively, the 132nd would be a road to nowhere if it went onto your property. It could obviously turn and head north and connect up with 133rd. But it's not a foregone conclusion that those roads get developed on your property. If you look at our neighborhood parks throughout the system, we have neighborhood park access points at road ends at all of our neighborhood parks. And those would have been roads that would have gone through our parks had our parcels been developed as subdivisions. And so it's not uncommon for us to work through that process when we're developing plans for neighborhood or community parks.
And our former manager, Bill Bjerke, I pointed out those roads that you see on the map there. And he seemed to think at that time that but we've worked with these in the past. And what is not shown on that schematic is on the northeast corner of the property, there's another road that comes onto my property. And it kind of winds its way and then centers and then comes down and ends on 131st Street. So there's actually three access points to my property from adjoining property.
So that green stripe coming from the north, is that what you're referring to? Right there?
Northeast corner.
Northeast corner.
Yeah, there's an access point right there. And then,
Okay.
I'm Brandon. If I understand what you're saying, you're offering to make land available to or give land to the county for a park? Is that big picture? Is that what we're talking about?
That's a very big picture.
Okay. I mean, on the surface, that sounds very generous. So thank you. And the motivation is to ensure that it's preserved as open space?
Yes, open space.
Okay.
And secondary is to have a park for the families in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, knowing only what I've just heard in the last few minutes, on the surface, that sounds like a really generous offer. So from my perspective, I'll say thank you. I'm sure there's a lot of details that I'm not privy to that these folks probably have a sensitivity to. And I guess for my own curiosity, are you saying that the land would be, for lack of a better phrase, leased, or are you offering to give the land to the county?
Or sell it,
yeah.
That's on the table.
All of it? Okay, got it.
I guess I would piggyback on that and just question, do you have any guiding principles or things you'd like to see preserved? Like, I see a couple trees on there. I'm not sure if those are things that, would find valuable to maintain. Or do you have any theme ideas? I mean, I know those are always things that go into action.
I just like to keep it in a natural state with the trees.
Nature park.
Yeah.
Oak trees? Those big ones?
Those are actually maple trees. So.
Maple trees.
Protected
agriculture. Yes. There's some oak on the property. You'll see an oak in the northwest corner. I planted those trees when I was a little kid from an acorn. Anyway, so yeah, just keep it natural, keep it open, keep it friendly for the neighborhood kids.
So it's in PIF District 8.
I believe that's right.
Park Improvement B District 8. And in the Parks Open Space and Recreation Plan for a neighborhood park, that PIF district it rates a B on a scale of A to F.
So priority
for, well, it's just it's doing pretty well from a level of service perspective. It gets a B as far as a grade goes. Whereas like PIF District 6 for neighborhood parks, it gets a C. You can't take PIF District 8 money and move it to PIF District 6. And I just looked at the PIF District 8 balance from December 31st of 2024. So the most recent PIF District balance that I have, there's money to acquire and develop a property in PIF District 8. I don't know if there's any other undeveloped parcels.
Pleasant Valley.
Yes. Pleasant Valley is not likely to be developed fully as a community park because there's no real way to develop a parking lot there. So
I think there's some improvements.
Yeah, there's some, yeah, I would say modest improvements planned at Pleasant Valley Park, but it wouldn't be on the order of a community park with parking lots and water sewer infrastructure, restroom facilities, those sorts of things. So the PIF balance as of December 31st of last year was about $9 million. So there's money in the PIF fund. So I would say that it would not be customary, and I'm speaking for Ross, but I would just say that it's not customary for us to lease dirt to build a park. It would be we would approach it from a gift perspective an acquisition perspective, because using public funds to do infrastructure on a leased piece of property is somewhat problematic.
Also, Weary and Minnehaha.
In that district. Okay. So
that are undeveloped.
So Minnehaha is slated to be developed in PIF District 8, and it's in the capital plan and about $2.5 million. So there's two and a half off of the nine. So now we're at 6.5. And then Blueberry would be probably another 2.5. So now we're at four and a half. Do the math. I'm not.
Do those already have master plans, and are they in the capital plans project? You said for a couple years.
We'll be taking Minnehaha to council before the end of the year as truly a neighborhood park. It's the council's decision whether to name it that, but we'll be taking it as a draft as truly a neighborhood park toward the end of the year, and that's slated for development in the draft capital plan, which we'll be talking about this afternoon in 2028. For development.
Blueberry, I think when we did the prioritization, was a little bit further down.
It's pretty far. Yeah, it's pretty far down on the list. I don't have that sort of seared in my brain.
I would wager that this one would probably be around the same based on what we know about the, I don't know about the logistics or the.
I just did a quick measurement on the GIS website, and it's a quarter of a mile from Greyhawk Park.
Yeah.
And so Greyhawk Park technically serves the neighborhood, the same neighborhoods that a neighborhood park in this area would serve, technically. Having another neighborhood park in that area would be fantastic, because we could, you know, consider amenities in a new neighborhood park that may not be at Greyhawk Park, which would be really great.
Yeah.
But as we'll discover later in our capital plan presentation, that our capital development is going to be slowing down, not speeding up, until we find a sustainable future. The process that Ross has been talking about over the last several meetings. So
Greyhawk is not really, in my view, not a safe park for people living in my neighborhood because of the street situation.
Mm-hmm.
Had the neighbors had underdeveloped some places there are sidewalks and curbs, some places mm-hmm. there aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want my kid going from my neighborhood to Greyhawk.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good perspective. We consider that when we're looking at parcels. We purchased land that may be within a quarter mile of an existing park because it's on the other side of a collector or an arterial, because you can't get to, you know, like Patton Parkway's a pretty good example where we've got parks that are pretty close together, but they're on either side of Patton Parkway because Patton Parkway is pretty hard to cross. So we would consider that when we're talking about a potential acquisition or a gift of your property.
Yeah, thank you for this proposal and for coming to the meeting tonight. We have a number of different properties throughout our system that are currently undeveloped, and those combined with proposals or options from current landowners are all considered in our capital planning. And so what we'll do is we'll take your proposal. We will consider that along with other properties we own and other potential acquisitions that we're considering and make decisions, and that will inform our capital plan moving forward. So we appreciate your time. Looking forward to getting a copy of that submission you gave the Parks Advisory Board tonight, and thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Hoover.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have a phone number, address?
You want to write it on one of these, and then we can give it to Ross?
Yeah.
All right. And you can also find it on
any side then move it.
Okay. Yeah, but it's...
Okay. Public comment from Brian. Do you and the in here? Do you want to discuss that?
I can. If you would like me to.
True.
You would like me to?
Yeah.
I'm not doing that previously. So.
Let's see. I can probably pull up. I can probably pull up Mr. Lynn's email. I had a nice conversation.
It's attached. And I attached it to this.
Okay. Well, I can share it on the screen though for those that don't have it in front of them. If you recall, Mr. Lynn called in to provide some. To propose a acquisition of a small portion of the Northeast 50th Avenue parcel that we recently purchased to provide him with some additional buffer space. Sometime last year. Share my screen. One single screen, so bear with me. There we go. I wish I could zoom out and provide you with a little bit more context, but Northeast 50th Avenue is to the right of this or east of this blown up area. The Lynn household is here. We own the Northeast 50th property. He had initially wanted to acquire 10 feet, and we considered it and informed Brian that we needed that property because there is an old road that comes down this grade through here and provides access to what we envision as a site for a future bridge to connect this property to the lawn park, which is across the creek. And so Brian has come back to us with a new proposal, more of a trade, which I spoke with him about at length. Here's the lawn park. This is a little bit better graphic for us to share. And he's proposing to swap us square foot for square foot. I had a conversation, as I mentioned, with him yesterday or the day before. Here's the sort of square foot trade he's proposing. He acquires this little sliver here. We end up with this sliver here plus a portion of the other side of the the creek. Surprisingly, his parcel goes all the way over to the other side of the creek. So here his property's in cyan. His proposed new property boundary would be in yellow. I reminded him that we still needed to have access to the historic road that goes down to the pond on our property and the future bridge site. But I told him that Ross and I would go out and take a look at this proposal and see if there's enough room for him to get some buffer and for us to keep access for a future trail to make that connection to the bridge, and that a boundary line adjustment that's a swap
square foot per square foot is easier, likely easier to justify to the property management committee than just that selling public land that benefits one person instead of the entire community. So we're going to continue to have this conversation. And if Danielle's on the phone or on the call, I asked him if he was interested in potentially selling or giving us this sort of bottom land piece of his property for urban open space in the process. And he said he was willing to talk about it. I'm not quite sure why he needs to own all the way over to the Lawn Park real steep creek bed. So I believe I put a time for Ross and I to go out and take a look at this. Brian's been really patient. He's a really nice neighbor, and been a really good person to coordinate with and brainstorm. So he continues to come back to us with creative ideas.
So his current property crosses the creek now.
He goes all the way over. Yeah, he goes all the way over to the lawn.
Yeah, and he just wants a little bit wider so people aren't marching past his bedroom window, basically.
Yeah, his kitchen window, yeah, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real. Yeah. It's real close.
Yeah, 10 feet. You can tell by looking at it. Yeah. It's fit.
It seems like it's a lot closer than 10 feet when you're out there because the barbed wire fence is like 5 feet from his house.
Yeah.
So, and we had it surveyed, and it's the fence is right on the property.
Yeah.
So, we're going to go out and take a look at it. And, I told him that we needed about 12 feet to maintain a 2 foot shoulder on either side of an 8 foot trail, and that if we got too far to the north, we'd be in that wooded area to the north of the clear area, and I didn't want to get into habitat. I didn't want to get into steep slope and increase the cost of developing a trail down to the bridge site. So we're gonna go take a look at it.
So this is information only.
What's that?
This is information for us only.
Yeah. It's a matter of public record because it's in my email. It's not a real estate deal. It's just a swap. And,
from the county's perspective, is the land gained of equal value or greater value in terms of use compared to the land that's given up?
We talked a little bit about that. I said it's not necessarily what you're proposing isn't necessarily equitable because of the quality of the land you're proposing to trade. And so we'll also need to consider that when we go to property management committee. But the area over on the other side on the Lawn parcel is flat ground. And so we would be trading flat ground on the east side of the creek for flat ground on the west side of the creek. Whether we've been doing next to the west side of the creek with that ground is unlikely. We might not even move the fence to bring it into the park, but it is flat ground for flat ground. And that's a good point because it's not the same quality real estate.
But it sounds like he's flexible. You described that as being patient and easy to work with. On the surface, it feels like something that if we could accommodate it, that'd be nice. But if it's not equal value, I don't know if the next step is a disproportionate amount of land that the county receives to compensate for the lower quality or lower use.
Yeah, I don't know what we would have to talk to Kevin and to Danielle, who've done a lot of real estate appraisal work, to see if we would need to get into that sort of level of detail. I think for me, when sort of interacting with a neighbor like Brian or the neighbor to the north of this parcel who's been really a gracious, friendly, gregarious person, I'm out there trying to collect friends. And be a good neighbor.
Yeah.
We need fans just as much as we need you know, happy neighbors. So Brian's been real patient with us. So
there's a comment from Jessica.
But isn't the basic issue the road, regardless of the cost or how nice he is?
It is. For sure. That's a good point. And we wouldn't concede the road because he's nice. I guess the larger point is it's nice to have a good neighbor and not somebody who's screaming in my ear and cursing at me and telling me they don't trust me. So,
is it a fire? Did I miss that it was a fire access road or just a road?
I think that there's an old water quality pond or some sort of a pond that is at the bottom of this property that the people who previously owned it developed for a fishing hole or something. But it is a road that goes down there. It's covered in ivy right now, but it is a road. I don't know if it's got gravel on it, but it is sort of the width of it.
Yeah.
We haven't gone down there to sort of figure out what sort of a bridge we put to get across. We're in the process of demoing all the structure from the property that should be starting here in the coming weeks. That's the first order of business is to secure the site, and part of site security beyond fencing is to remove the nuisance buildings that promote squatting.
Russ, do you have a manager's report?
I do. Thank you. I wanted to take some time to talk about the sustainable future conversation we've had with council and now expanding to throughout the county. And I just wanted to back up really quickly and share detail from the PowerPoint that we gave at council on the 26th of March. And so everybody's on the same page with this conversation. The sustainable future conversation came out of many years long discussion around sustainable funding for parks. And this is just a portion of the presentation we gave at the 26th of March council meeting that I wanted to share with you so everybody's up to speed. We've discussed this in the past, but I want to provide an update today, and so this background's important. So starting from this slide, which is probably midway through the deck here, we have 521,000 residents and increasing daily. Clark County is growing rapidly, as you all know. We manage 7,166 acres of parkland and thousands of more acres of legacy lands, natural areas, and open space in conservation. We have 31 full-time staff that maintain those sites with an $8.1 million operating budget. And so we wanted to create some comparisons to really understand how we are doing when we look at these numbers in comparison with other cities, other counties, other agencies, not only in Washington State, but across the country. And so we did some benchmarking looking at data nationally. This slide, which you probably can't see the small text on, This is a snip directly from the National Recreation Parks Association's Agency Performance Review document. It's published on every 2 years, and they survey parks agencies across the country and take that data and put it into one single document and do some analysis to it so that it's useful, functional data for agencies throughout. So we looked at this as a benchmarking opportunity. This slide talks about discusses the median operating expenditures per capita across the country. And they break it down. Each bar on this chart is a different size jurisdiction. And so on the far right are the larger jurisdictions, on the far left are the all agencies, and the dark green are the smallest agencies in the country. So we're on the far right, we're the gray bar. And this shows that, again, the operating expenditures per capita, per person in that service area. So the median for an agency serving over 250,000 is the gray bar, and that total median amount per capita is $57.61 per capita. And so that's the national median. That means half of the agencies are spending more than that per capita, and half of the agencies are spending less than that per capita. But this is the median amount. This is the average. I wanted to show you now how we stack up to the national median. In Clark County, we're at $15.62 per capita. And I just mentioned that the national median is $57.61. There are other ways to look at this, though, and to benchmark how we are performing compared to others. And here's another example, and that is operating expenditures per acre. So if you look at the national median of $4,421 per acre, we are at $1,136 per acre for our operating budget. And I think it's really important to distinguish this from capital. So in any public agency, any government, there are two buckets of money. There is operating dollars, which is what we're talking about here, and then there's capital. And you're going to hear a lot of detail about capital and the capital plan from David shortly. But this is the operating side. So these are the dollars we utilize to maintain our parks on a day-to-day basis. And so we're about a quarter of the national median. Here's another way to look at this, and that's full-time staff per 10,000 residents. National median is 4.7, and we are at 0.59 in Clark County. So clearly not, we are significantly under the national average, and we will not meet our growth needs for parks and natural areas in the county as a result of the inability to maintain them. We simply do not have the money or the personnel to maintain more parks. Our operating expenditure is significantly under the national average, and deferred maintenance list continues to grow. All while, let me skip ahead here. This is the growth projection from the state of Washington. The bar chart shows data that was collected and displayed on the state agency's website when we did our last system plan update. It projected in 2040, we would have 643,000 residents in Clark County. And then the section on the bottom portion, and you certainly can't read this because I barely can on my laptop. The new projection, this is the most recent data that was just pulled a couple months ago. By 2040, the state is projecting 660,000. So a significant increase over just a few years ago when our system plan was updated. So the growth rate is increasing, and Clark County is a super desirable area, and it's in part because of our parks, and we will not be able to build new parks or meet the growth needs per our level of service as a result of a lack of operational funding. So what we proposed to County Council, I'm going to skip ahead here. We proposed and recommended to create a Parks and Nature Sustainable Future Task Team, essentially a group of people who can dive into the details of our current situation, our projected growth needs, and to use these this benchmark data to inform how we move forward and what funding sources might be available to meet the growth needs. To provide updates to County Council, to present a report at the final at the conclusion of the work, and to provide a recommendation to County Council about which sources we might want to look at, which mechanisms we might want to look at, what models are out there for how this gap gets closed. We are not unique in a rapidly growing area. There are some great models out there about facing the exact problem we're facing now, and those areas were able to close that gap through various funding mechanisms. So come to today. That's a quick update on what we discussed at County Council. Come to today. Since March 26th, we have been working to connect with key stakeholders, and most importantly, are cities within the county. So the challenges and problems I showed on those slides exist at the city level as well. The city park systems are in the same predicament. And so we have gathered with the city staff multiple occasions. We developed a charter for this task team, and I wanted to share that with you because we're bringing this charter back to County Council next Wednesday, the 21st, for their what's called council time. And so the mission of this task team will be to explore, identify, and recommend sustainable funding strategies for the region to preserve, maintain, enhance public parks and natural areas, ensuring equitable access, promoting environmental stewardship, committing to health and wellness, and enhancing economic vitality for current and future generations. And the goals of this work are as follows. I won't read all of this. Number one, to assess the existing conditions and context. Recognizing that the county system is different than a city system, and that the two go together. The two fit together to create a full system. Number two, to research funding opportunities. Number three, to engage key stakeholders. Number four, to promote transparency. Number five, to understand, again, that city and county and other parks play a distinct role and an important role within a robust, modern park system within a county. Number six, to prioritize equity and access, ensuring that we are building parks that are accessible. Many of our parks built in the past are not, and so this is going to be a focus for this group. And number seven, to establish a long-term sustainability recommendation to not only the county council, but to parks throughout Clark County in those city systems. Again, scope of work, essentially reviewing the current state, describing what the future looks like, and figuring out what a sustainable mechanism, how that might be utilized. And it'll include elected officials and key stakeholders from throughout the county. Staff will help facilitate the discussions, and members will contribute their expertise. We plan to meet biweekly for the first few months and then monthly as the work progresses. And then in the end, as I mentioned earlier, there'll be a final report presented to County Council, but also to each City Council as well. So this is the charter that will be shared with County Council next Wednesday. This will also come back to you at your June meeting, where we will be joined by the Parks Director at City of Vancouver. And we'll give you an update on the work. We will also be bringing this charter to the City of Vancouver Parks Board and essentially all of the cities in some fashion will be presented with this material. So I wanted to make sure you were aware of this and knew about it and saw it in advance. And we will include this with the minutes so you have a copy of it. But if any of you are interested, you're more than welcome to come to the county council meeting on the 21st for that council time where we present discuss this work ahead. So I wanted to see if there are any questions, concerns, thoughts.
I was going to say, do you know what percent of our operating we're like monetizing? I know we brought this up in our last meeting and we're like typically at 1%. So I know like you were saying cities are looking at this too. So I think there is definitely a lot of room for collaboration.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In our discussions with staff at every city, this is a topic and a need that has come up in their own system plans. In their own planning documents, they are also recognizing that their funding is not adequate to meet the growth needs. And so, yes, this absolutely resonates with cities throughout the county. And so we will continue to have these conversations with staff, but ultimately this will be elevated to city councils and county council alike.
So building off of that question, so the recognizing that the need is similar for county and city. We're providing this document to them to save them the effort of producing a similar document, or?
We are, yeah, it's a great question. So the view that we are taking and the direction we got from county council was that each city could develop their own funding source to meet the growth need. And they'll likely need to. But there are models where the entire region works together to develop one funding source that benefits everyone. And so that would be regional parks, community parks, and small neighborhood parks like you see predominantly in cities. That would be a source that would feasibly fund all of the needs throughout the county. So there are models for this all over the country. King County employs a similar model where they have a levy, and they've used this levy for the last 15 years or so. It's actually on the ballot in King County in August for renewal. And it is a levy that is put on people's property taxes that the voters have approved for 15 years. And it funds King County parks, but it also is King County shares those funds with the cities within King County. They also have grant programs to agencies throughout the county for use on parks.
Thank you. I have one more question.
Thank
you. So as we're looking at growth projections, population growth projections, do we have any data on whether or not that represents a consistent demand on the parks? In other words, for example, I know Vancouver Public Schools and other school districts, they have declining enrollment. So with presumably families, kids, they're maybe making up a larger percentage of park use. Does our need for park acquisition change? Is it a different rate of growth going forward than what has been in the past? Or do we have data to even give us insight on that?
Yeah, so user data, school districts have it easy when they collect user data because you have to enroll. And of course, when you use a park, you don't. Historically, user data has been challenging to collect in a park system, but we have the technology now to collect it and understand park use trends and use total numbers of users. So for our PROS plan update that will kick off end of 25, early 26, we will be utilizing a new tool. There are a number of vendors out there that collect cell phone data, and so that cell phone data is aggregated and shared, and there are visualization tools that we will be employing for that planning document. That will help inform our demand and our usage, and that usage will be used to calculate our level of service and update our level of service. So yes, we will have those numbers in the next system plan update, or actually before that. So we've viewed a couple demos, and a number of us have actually recently attended a session where we learned about a couple of different vendors and experiences with those different vendors. What we saw in our first demo is that user rates are generally up. They fluctuate between park to park. But the number off the top of my head, I think it was, 200 and something thousand had visited Frenchman's Bar, for example, in the last year. So we will know the time that they visit, the time of day, which days. It'll be really important data for us.
I think it's safe to say that our park visitation won't go down. Types of people that are visiting the parks might change as the demographics of the population change.
Sure.
And that might drive the way we develop parks moving forward, or the way we renovate parks moving forward, the types of facilities we may put in. And we talk about that pretty regularly as a sort of planning and development team. And we'll be able to mine some of the some of the data that we'll be collecting during the PROS plan, and some of the feedback we'll be getting through the public process on, you know, what types of facilities folks want.
Yeah.
And we'll be, that's why we update it every 6 years.
Yeah. No, no kids doesn't mean no park visits.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to mention as well that our parks are not static, and they'll change over time. Lacamas Lake and Vancouver Lake, they will have different amenities in the future. And so, and as David was just pointing out, that those changes are informed by our residents and business owners. And that's why we do the system planning on a regular basis, to capture that input and capture what's desirable. In our last system plan update, trails was the number one desired amenity in our system. And so we're using that to inform our, how we design parks.
I would venture that will be the number one element in the next plan. It's consistently been the number one element in the National Recreation and Parks Association surveys that are regularly done. It's just the most approachable recreation activity. So
more to come on this topic. I just wanted to update everybody, get everybody up to speed, and we will include the charter and the PowerPoint deck that we presented on March 26th at Council, and so for your information. But if you have any questions on any of this, please feel free to reach out.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Okay, do you let Lenny go first? Or you?
I'm going to let Lenny go first.
Okay. You don't want to discuss any of our other projects?
As part of the manager's meeting.
Manager's updates?
Well, so in response to Jessica's thing, I know, like, we're talking about funding, like, a bench costs $5,000 to do, like, crowdfunding kind of things. Like, there are places that are starting to research that. So that Ross could probably speak to that. I just know, like, we've been talking about it almost every meeting.
That's a great question. So there's a big difference in scale between what a GoFundMe campaign can fund and what a whole system needs. And so absolutely GoFundMe is functional and works really well. I've had really good success with that in raising money for different park amenities in the past. But it really is at the park level and not the system level. The system level is a much bigger dollar amount because of the scale of it all.
I think it boils down to capacity to manage those sorts of things. Small projects are... And GoFundMe and Kickstarter would be functional for smaller park improvements. And just to do 10 small projects is much more complicated than to do one larger project. And then there's intake of money and processing of money and reporting. And capital's not, it is an issue, but it isn't the issue of the day. We have the capital resources. We don't have the O&M resources right now, and so that's our primary governor right now that we need to address. So,
what about GoFundMe for an employee, a temporary or something? I know at the Ridgefield Refuge, the Friends of the Refuge actually fund a couple of temporaries, just with their donations and their support, and the refuge couldn't do it without them. Is there anything ever done at a parks level where you could have a maintenance person funded by a Friends of the Parks or something?
It would have to be an employee of a nonprofit that.
Yeah, that's how
that would employ that person.
Yeah, and that's how it works for the Friends. They're actually employed by the Friends.
Yeah, we don't currently have the Parks Foundation wouldn't. Even at this point, they have the capacity to do something like that. I wouldn't imagine. They don't have a full-time executive director. And they would be the only Friends of Clark County Parks right now. There's some Friends of the Farm. You know, that's a possibility out here.
Also, the money issue as well.
Yeah.
I think these are exactly the types of conversations that we absolutely need to have. And new ideas are absolutely key to that discussion. It's definitely. So the focus of the task team is going to be big sources, significant mechanisms, but also smaller mechanisms like GoFundMe. Some of the other ideas that different agencies have employed are you know, fees, updating fees, bringing fees higher. You can even dwell on the area, and many agencies have, of different types of taxes, smaller level funding taxes. So an example is soda pop tax, or a percentage of gas tax, or a small percentage of sales tax, or things like that. So I expect this task team to talk about all of that. So if you're interested, those meetings will be public meetings. So we'll absolutely keep you informed on that.
You can provide, it looks like you're going to provide an update of the development projects.
So we've started two of our larger projects for the year, Harmony Sports Park, which is the parking lot improvements. Michael Chow's our liaison for that one, and those pictures are on the left, top and bottom. So it's a nice pile of rock, I'm sure, that's been delivered, base course. And then on the right is Curtin Creek Community Park, which now, instead of a hay field, looks like a dirt field. That's soon to be developed further. Just want to share those. And is it my turn to go on to things?
Sure. Okay.
So I was supposed to be here at the last minute or meeting, and I failed to do so. So I have some gifts to apologize with. We for our outreach and engagement, we developed some colorful stickers. Please just pick one. Okay. Your favorite color. What do you think, too, maybe? And then keep passing these that way. And we also
have 500 stickers, and you're only going to let them take one.
I have 1,200 stickers. Anyway, so we worked to develop different colors, things that we can hand out at our outreach and engagement events. And then we have also developed our first park inventory map. There's been a legacy lands map in the past, but we worked in collaboration with Danielle and Kevin to create a map that represents both of those all kind of combined into one. So if you were to open it up, it's got information about places you can take your pet off leash, what to expect when you visit the park, how you can volunteer, has some legacy lands information, so shelter reservation information. And then if you flip it all the way open, it has this beautiful map that our all-star planner, Michael Chow, helped design. Please take a look at that, because it's a lot of work that he went through, that we've all been through to get this ready. But we're
going to have to look at it 3 times in my presentation this evening. So.
Really proud of it. Now you have one to look at in person.
Thank you.
And then I'll pass these. I got to pass everything else separately, I guess. And late last year, early this year, we went through a process to figure out how we're going to be reaching out to the public more intentionally through outreach and engagement. And can I either share the screen? Yeah. Sorry, guys. Oh, I'm still sharing. So this is a look at our plan, our tentative can change by the moment plan for outreach and engagement for 2025. And I've got them in order that they should occur. The gray at the top are events that already happened. And then there's some that are highlighted pink that we could use some PAB support at if you're interested. But I'll just kind of go through some of the ones that we've already done and some kind of highlights of what we're planning to do this year, so I don't have to read everything to you. But we did have the Gordijoma Natural Area Open House on April 24th. That's a project that Evelyn Ias has been managing, and she and David did some collaboration in that one, because we ended up with over 200 folks that appeared out of nowhere. Right? There's photographs here on
they
the
appeared out of the bar.
it was held at this at the Cedars Public House across the street from Gordy Jolma. So over 200 people showed up. We had to split the room into two different groups. A smaller group had to go outside to a covered space. And Damon was nice enough to lead that group. And Evelyn was able to handle everybody on the inside. But a lot of positive feedback, some concerns about things that we're going to work through on concept plan development. But it's great to see that many people coming out to one of our events and really invested in the upcoming project. And then on April 30th, Michael met with the Clark County Accessible Community Advisory Committee. They came out and met him and others from park planning at Climbline Pond, and they brought out wheelchairs so folks from park planning could kind of experience what it's like to visit the park with if you happen to have mobility issues. And I think that was a great start. Michael is actually going to take over our development of our ADA transition plan for me, and so I think having that experience is going to really inform how he looks at that project, which I think is pretty exciting.
Councillor Young attended that event as well. Yeah. It was nice to have Councillor Spate.
Yeah.
It's great.
He shows up to a lot of things.
Yeah, it's involved. And then on May 3rd, we had the Curtain Creek Community Park groundbreaking event. We had about 40 folks who showed up there, so just under 40 children. But it was an invitation-only event. We had to put it together at the last minute just because of the way things worked out with the contractor. But you can see the beautiful gold shovel photo here. So Scott Sawyer is in the yellow hard hat in the front. He's been the project manager on the project for about 6 years now. This is going to be one of his last projects. He's retiring in October. So he was really happy to have been recognized for his efforts. And then Russell Malberg is the second gentleman. He was with the Washington Recreation and Conservation Office. And I saw that he was on the call earlier. I don't know if he still is, but
he's still there.
He's the grant manager. There he is for the project. And we're really fortunate he was kind enough to speak some words at that event. Sue Marshall is next to him. She's our council chair. That's Ross in the middle. And then Jim Cowles next to him. And Jenny Coker, our deputy director, and then myself, as I'm the liaison from Parks for that project. So pretty exciting stuff. And then this past Saturday, the 8th, we David and I tag-teamed for the Heritage Farm Mother's Day plant sale. We set up a booth in a really cool barn, and we had information to share on the wetland restoration project and also our future public access improvements project, where we're going to develop a concept for a trail here at Heritage Farm. And so we had over 100 individual contacts that day. It was a beautiful day to be out at the farm. And my first experience at that plant sale, I think it's an amazing event for the community and for the farm altogether. But I only had one negative interaction with some concerns over the trail, but most people had the look of excitement when you could talk about the fact that they might be able to come someday and wander aimlessly over on the side and not have to steer at a rusty old fence from East 78th Street. So
we had the American Farm Advisory Team volunteers, yes, along for the ride, which was great. Lisa, yes, and
Sandy Brown. Sandy
Brown.
Yeah.
They were really nice to sort of have the Farm Advisory Team represented at our table at the spot.
Right. I think these events are really, I think it's great when we can work with the Park Advisory Board from Farm Advisory Team. And you have a different perspective than we have, and I think it helps make connections with the community too. So I think it's been great. This Saturday, I'll be at Luke Jensen Sports Park just down the road. We have a grant that we are going to be applying for in 2026 to make some improvements to Luke Jensen, and that's a youth athletic facilities grant that Russell's going to help me make best application for. But we need to seek some feedback on our plans and make sure that we're listening to the community and what they want to see in that project as we work our grant. grant application. We'll also be presenting some options for playground equipment replacement there. So if you happen to be in the area and not at the Hazelville Parade of Bands, feel free to stop by and see us. And then next, we're just hitting it here in May. Next Tuesday will be our first park play date. We scheduled a minimum of 4 park play dates. These are things that we kind of came up with last year where we purchased some lawn games, simple games that kids can play, adults can play together. And we set them up in a park. And then we bring our wonderful presentation boards with pictures and ideas of things that we're going to do. And we talk people's ears off and we let their kids be distracted with games and we bring snacks. And it just gives us a chance to have conversations with people who are using the park or that are using area parks and just make them more aware of what's going on and potentially provide feedback. So those 4 are scheduled at Walnut Grove in May, and then I'm not going to have it memorized, but we have 1 in June at Pacific Park, where we'll be talking about the future development there. And then we have, I can't remember this, Stockford Village over in Hazelville in August, and then in early October we'll be at Daybreak Regional Park talking about, there's a lot of changes going on at Daybreak and just the way the property looks, and then we can also talk about Louisville because we're not too far away from that there. So be exciting. And then you'll see some other things that are characterized as park play dates, but those are mostly focused around projects specifically. There's 1 at Heritage Farm that'll happen, I think, in June, where we'll talk about improvements project that we have there and see feedback on some playground equipment replacements we're hoping will happen by the end of the year. I'm going to make happen by the end of the year.
You said Heritage Farm.
I'm sorry, Hazelville. Yeah. They're both so close to my heart, and they started the letter H.
And you're close to both of them.
We had a bigger plan or bigger ideas. I had bigger ideas of us being at more community events, but those are really hard to staff because they're usually on the weekend and they're usually many hours long. So we've narrowed it down to the East Vancouver Farmers Market, which actually occurs in the middle of the workday, which makes it a lot easier for us to participate in. So we're going to be doing that on June 16th. We could use some Park Advisory Board support if you happen to be available on whatever day of the week June 12th is. That would be great if you want to do that with us. We'll actually be at the Produce Pal stand, which means we'll have a little activity that we're doing with kids while one person is talking somebody's ear off, their parents' ear off about park projects. And then we'll also be at the Vancouver Farmers Market for 1 day this year in July 12th. That'll be the same thing where we're in the Produce Pals program. That'll be centrally located in the farmers market. And so we expect to get a lot of traffic. I think that's also Pride in the Park weekend. So if you're interested in helping us with that, that would be fantastic. We're trying to staff 2 movie in the park nights in combination or coordination with the city. We haven't participated in any city-specific activities yet, but we thought that movie in the park might be a nice, relaxed environment where people are bringing their families. But those are on Friday nights, and we've picked 2 of them in August, but if we can't staff them, we're not going to be able to do them. So if you happen to be interested in either of those, please let me or Ross or David or something like that. And then the rest are pretty much specific to projects. We'll have another grant application for next year's Orchards Community Parks. We'll have a play date for that. We know that we're going we'll have a public meeting later in the year for the ADA transition plan. These are things we don't necessarily have dates for yet, but I just wanted to know they're out there. And then we'll be going back to Luke Jensen Sports Park in the fall. Right now, when we meet with them, we're really focused on Little League. That's what's happening right now, and we're trying to get those Little Leaguers families input. But then in the fall, it's going to be more soccer, and so we wanted to get them as well. There'll be a second meeting for Gordy Jolmes in time this year. We'll have a meeting for Heritage Farm Public Access and Events, and probably a Park Advisory Board for the town. This is what we have planned so far this year. If it is something that you're interested in, or maybe you don't know that you can do it, I can still send you an invite, and it could be on your calendar, and you can tell me something whether or not you are able to commit or not. But I think that's pretty much it. We're just trying to create more connection with our community, trying to be more thoughtful in what we're doing. We're also meeting with other districts or parks districts, just to kind of understand what they're doing for their outreach and engagement, and hopefully learn some, what's the word? Right, they can make things efficiencies. So that, because we're a staff of six that are trying to do something that's probably a staff, eight or 10 people, especially adjusted. And so we need to learn how to do it the most efficient way.
I could do a shift on Flag Day.
Flag Day?
Yeah, turns out it's
that
Flag Day.
Is that June 12th?
June 14th. June 14th. That case of Bill.
Okay, great. You'll be here on a week.
Yeah, I would just say it's a shift for the whole bloody thing. Get it over there. It's only 4 hours.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I'm just saying that you could come for 2 hours, you could come for the whole thing. I understand. It's a lot to give up on a Saturday. You don't have to know right now.
Yeah, what is your email so that you said contact you if we think we can?
Sure. It's Lindy, Lynde. Dot wallet, WALLICK at clark.wall.gov. I can also email all of you. I can email this to you if that makes it easier.
I would like that.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that's it.
You forgot the big thing at East Fork of the Lewis River, the groundbreaking.
That is, plans, and that is the ham. I'm not going to steal her thunder.
Okay.
That's pretty big thunder to steal.
All right. I didn't realize that there's thunder to be stolen.
On my own house.
But that was a real big groundbreaking.
If I can, just to mention, I think that's a great example of all of the land within Clark County, whether it's a legacy lands property or a park or a city park, people don't care, and they know that they're public use spaces. And so I think that's the approach we're taking and trying to figure out what funding looks like as well. Like, how do we fund all of these spaces? Because they're used and loved by everyone. So I just wanted to point that out. Thanks.
All right. Ready for the next topic?
Everyone ready?
All right. So this is a part, maybe a little bit onboarding, maybe a little bit of a refresher for some of the existing Park Board members, but there's some new folks. So I thought I would go through a little bit about the Park District, talk a little bit about who we are, why we are, the way we are, before we get into sort of the capital plan. And this will be the first of two, maybe even three times where we take a look at the capital plan. So, and I will, as we go through the presentation, I'll let you know what the photos are, because that's the most interesting part of the presentation with the photographs. This is Sifton Neighborhood Park. We replaced this neighborhood park structure last fall. Justin, to my right, who's our capital program specialist, who helps me with the capital plan, also does a lot of major maintenance work. He marched this through the contracting and installation process. Did a great job. And this is one of our first projects with playground grass. And then there's knotweed chips. There's tan artificial grass with bouncy material underneath it. So
We're giving it a try. And it looks like dead grass. It's just not what I wanted it to look like. But it looks like dead grass. So it's really tan in person. So a little introductions. I asked Justin to come sit with me this evening. Justin and I spent a lot of time looking at these really awful spreadsheets. Justin is invaluable in helping me fill in lots of cells and columns and keeping track of everything. And over time, Justin will be doing more and more of this presentation, even some of it this year. I will probably stay connected on a stewardship capital and the New Park capital side, and Justin will be probably more engaged in the major maintenance side of it, managing the sort of 6-year planning schedule for major maintenance. So welcome, Justin. Also on our capital planning team, obviously Ross, and folks that aren't on the call or in the room, Amanda Scott and Nick Bundy in our finance team. Nick is our sort of PIF person, for lack of a better term. He helps with PIF forecasting, make sure that when we allocate PIF funds, we don't allocate too much, we don't allocate it to the wrong thing. Keeps us honest. And then Amanda Scott, who is our more focused on REIT 2, real estate excise tax. We'll talk a little bit about funding buckets as we get into the presentation. So she helps us with our budget, which this is not a budget. This is a capital plan that we're talking about this evening, but it does provide its foundation for our annual budget. And she is also the person who has helped us get organized in our capital plan, because it was real messy when Rocky and I got here and tried to wrestle it to the ground. And so we're in much better shape than we were 5 years ago when I first, I've only been here for 3.5 years, but I've been involved somehow in 5 capital plans. I don't know how that happened, but when I was doing the summary, the trend spreadsheet, somehow I recognized a capital plan from 5 years ago. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Parks and Nature overview, like I mentioned, you know, the map that Lindy handed out. We'll talk about our Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan, because it is the overarching document that tells us this is why we do what we do and in what order. Then I'll give you a little bit of a capital plan overview. We'll talk about the process, the planning process, and then we'll talk a little bit about the timeline. And then we'll get to the fun part. That's the questions. So without further ado, it's appropriate that you got a map. So the Clark County Parks and Nature Division, we're in Public Works, as you probably all realize. We manage community, neighborhood, and regional parks. We manage some regional trails. We have urban and rural open space tracks that we manage when they have recreation facilities on them. If they're true natural sort of open space areas, in many cases, that would be lands management responsibility. And Kevin and Danielle are here this evening, so there is some cross-pollination there. The map that Lindy handed you in orange, the orange parcels are those open space parcels. The sort of lime green are our regional parks, and they're labeled. And those parcels are outside of the urban growth boundary. And then inside the urban growth boundary are the community and neighborhood parks. And so we manage every community and neighborhood park inside the urban growth boundary, but outside of the city limits. So that's an important distinction. So if it's in the urban growth boundary and in the city limits, that's a Vancouver park. If it's in the urban growth boundary and outside the city limits, it's our park. There are a few exceptions. We don't need to get into that today. But that's basically the the 98% of our parks and nature system. That Greater Clark Park District, I drilled into it on this map. And the reason that I drilled into it here is because I wanted you to see that we have these different PIF districts. So this map, Michael, the map magician that Lindy recognized earlier, I sent him a chat this morning and asked him if he had a map that had the PIF districts on it. And he said, I don't, but I can make one. And so he added the PIF districts for me this morning. So props to Michael for doing that. I see he joined us. He's on the call. Thank you, Michael, for adding the PIF districts. And so this map represents those PIF districts. And so the PIF districts, by and large, are in the urban growth, in the urban growth boundary. They do not, in most cases, extend beyond the urban growth boundary. There are some areas where the urban growth boundary and the PIF districts don't line up. That is a mapping error and an organizational error that needs to be cleaned up, but it's not front burner, but it is, we're aware of it and it needs to be addressed over time. And this is how we evaluate the system. This is how we prioritize development of the system. So it's worth noting that these are the PIF districts. And so we have 4 through 10. The city's districts are letters. So if you're ever looking at a map and you see them, hey, that's a city district. If you see 4 or 5 or 8 or 10, those are ours. You've probably seen this information before, but I'm characterized it here. Oh, there's Lindy at the at Heritage Farm. Really picture in. We have 75 developed parks. I won't read you all this information. The 13 regional parks, 14 community parks. I put the acreages on here for you all. Of note here, because we had our visitor, Mr. Smool, at the outset of the meeting, we have 16 undeveloped sites in the Greater Clark Park District at this point. It was 17, but we're developing Curtain Creek, so we're going down by one. Community park sites, 14 neighboring park sites. And those have been prioritized based on evaluation criteria. And that all starts with the evaluation criteria at the proposed plan level. And then we apply demographics based on need and return on investment. And there are a number of different criteria that we use to prioritize the development of those parks. And so when you look at our capital plan specifics and you see a park in there slated for development, we did decide based on some criteria that we were going to develop that park in that order. It wasn't just I live in that neighborhood, so I want a park. So we could go through a process. Why do we do all of this? Well, we love it, first of all. I've been in this industry for over 30 years, and most everybody that I've ever worked with is mission-driven. We love what we do in Park and Rec, but we also have to do it because Washington State statute says that we have to do it. Basically, Planning GoldenEye and RCW 3670 says that municipalities, county and city governments need to retain open space and green space, enhance recreational opportunities, enhance fish and wildlife habitat. And one of the ways you do that is by developing park and recreation facilities. So that is a requirement. And further down in that state statute, that RCW, it mentions the need to develop a parks, recreation, and open space plan. So that's why we develop a park, recreation, and open space plan. As part of that park, recreation, and open space plan, we do a level of service analysis. And everybody does that level of service analysis a little bit differently. And in our current park, recreation, and open space plan, we established a acres per 1,000 residents. And then we also established a walkability analysis for our neighborhood parks. So our neighborhood parks have a walk. We apply a half mile to a neighborhood park as a way to evaluate our sort of neighborhood park infrastructure. These are sort of antiquated level of service analysis tools, and we'll be exploring different ways to do that when we update our 22 to 27 capital, our PROS plan, excuse me. But that's the way we've done it most recently. So once we have those that analysis done, the plan, the PROS plan sets goals to address the level of service gaps. And those gaps, as I mentioned, are based on proximity and also on anticipated future growth. So if you look at our PROS plan, we do plan for growth in our PROS plan like most municipalities do, and projections within those PIP districts, like we mentioned earlier. And I just threw this map back in here to remind you about those PIP districts. So when I mentioned to Mr. Smoove that the PIP district where his property falls, 8 for neighboring parks, is graded as a B, which is pretty good. And it's only a quarter of a mile away from a park, which is also makes it a little bit more challenging to see something rise to, you know, a high level of development from a priority standpoint. Not to say that it wouldn't be a desirable piece of property, but we have to go through that process when we have 16 properties to consider because everybody wants their park right now. So, so once we have that PROS plan and we have this list of things that we need to do from a development perspective, we need a plan for how to get that done. And that's when the capital improvement plan and the capital facilities plan come into play. So the capital facilities plan is a 20-year plan, and the capital improvement plan, which we're going to talk about today, just in broad terms, before we talk about it in more specific terms next time, those are the sort of budgetary vehicles, for lack of a better term, to sort of move us forward in addressing those needs. And so, and they're based on that gap analysis, and they help us focus our acquisition dollars, our limited staff resources on acquisition and development of new parks to eliminate those gaps in service. Pretty straightforward, right? We got a need, we got money, we need to spend our money to address that need, go and do that thing, right? Additionally, the CIP, our CIP, and not every CIP, not every capital improvement plan addresses major maintenance, but ours does. And we'll talk a little bit about why our capital plan does that and what dollar, what bucket of money we use for that. And we also have developed a category, and we'll talk a little bit about categories when we get a little bit further into this presentation, called Stewardship Capital Improvements. We'll talk a little bit about that. So that's existing sites where we add recreation amenities. And we'll talk a little bit about why we have that category when we get a little bit further down the line. So here are the categories. I mentioned major maintenance. We put it in the capital plan because we can use real estate excise tax, which is a typical pot of money for municipalities to use to do capital improvements that extend the useful life of an existing asset. So if we replace a roof on a shelter and it extends the life of the shelter, we can use real estate excise tax to do that thing, to replace that roof. We can use real estate excise tax to paint the building if it extends the useful life of the building. And the reason that our major maintenance is in our capital plan is because we have access to real estate excise tax. Not every parks and recreation district has access to real estate excise tax. It's up to the municipalities individually to whether or not they allow their park district to use real estate excise tax. We have the luxury at Clark County to have access to real estate excise tax, and we currently, our real estate excise tax usage is about $3.5 million a year, average. Some years we use more, some years we use less. We go to, Ross will go to his boss, Jenny Coker, and to Ken later with the hard draft capital plan. It's a little bit higher than $3.5 million. We're working on it. To try and get it down. But we have some big ticket items in our plan, some bridge replacements, which are really hard to swallow and not do other things. So, we have that luxury. That stewardship capital improvement program that is PIP eligible if it's new facility. So Lindy mentioned new improvements at Pacific Park. It's a perfect example. We're going to be adding a softball soccer field there. It's part of the existing existing park plan, but it didn't get built in the first phase, so it's PIP eligible. If we were going to replace the field there with sports turf, that would not be park impact fee eligible. That would be REIT2 eligible, but it wouldn't be PIF eligible because it's an existing facility. You can build new facilities. You can't upgrade the existing facilities. We're going to be adding pickleball courts to Pacific Park. Those are PIF eligible because there are no courts there. So the reason that we created this category 3 years ago was because of this operation for maintenance staffing issue that we are experiencing. We still recognize there's a recreation need in the community. And if we make these recreation facility improvements within existing parks that we have in the system, we reduce drag time as opposed to building new parks. It's not a no net gain in operations hours, but it is more efficient than building in a new park in its entirety. So it's a bit of a compromise. It's not perfect, but it's better than building a new park in its entirety. This is a Lucky Minkler house. We, part of our program, when we buy a property, I mentioned earlier, tearing down houses, site security. So I asked everybody today on our Teams chat, I need pictures for my presentation because my presentation's boring. And somebody sent me a picture of us tearing down a house, and so I couldn't resist. If Danielle sent me the Minkler picture, thank you, Danielle. Your Minkler demo made it in the slideshow. New park capital, it is what it is. Build new parks. PIP eligible. We chase grant money, like Lenny mentioned. Park acquisition, PIP eligible. Sometimes we get grant money to do that as well. Legacy lands acquisition, which is Danielle and Kevin's wheelhouse, and that is conservation future funds, and that's a totally different program altogether. But their acquisition program is in our capital plan because last year we were all one happy family. And we're still happy second cousins or whatever we are. And so we still work closely with them, and their acquisition dollars are in our capital plan still. And we do some major maintenance for them, and we do some work with them out of Cambondo. So you'll see some of that in our capital plan. And then park system planning, which that comes out of the levy, the Greater Clark Park District levy, which is a burden on the O&M dollars, but the PROS plan would come out of the GCPD levy. The DEI plan, diversity, equity, and inclusion plan, the ADA transition plan, the capital, the facilities assessment plan, the sustainable futures plan, anything that is non-property related is not PIF eligible. It is not REIT2 eligible because it's not capital oriented. And so it has to come out of the GCPD because we can't tap the general fund. So those are the funding sources. All right. Any questions so far? All right, next slide. Now, this is just as far, this basically is as far as we're going to get into the numbers. There's two number slides this evening. And I tried my best to simplify this as compared to the previous number slide that you saw them last year. This is just a fund allocation trend slide. This shows that 22 to 27 adopted CIP on the left-hand side, and then the 26 to 31 draft numbers as they're currently looking in our big burly spreadsheet. And you can spend all the time you want looking at this these numbers and speculating as to why they're going up and down, and you can ask as many questions as you want. And we can do our best to answer those questions. I think the biggest takeaway for me, if I had to give you sort of a broad explanation, 22 to 27 capital plan at $50 million, we didn't have a planning and development section. It was Rocky, and he'd been here for 3 months, and Lindy, and she'd been here for 3 months longer than Rocky. And there was nobody doing capital planning. And so there just wasn't any capacity for major maintenance. There wasn't, they were just getting going. And so, that seems like a big number, but it's not really a big number when you think about building parks. And then 23 to 28, Rocky moves into the division manager position, and then I get here and we start to envision a planning and development team, and we do develop a team of six people. So the planning and development team is six people, and we've got more capacity to do more things and start to address the deferred maintenance and start to understand what the real need is and start to do the prioritization. And so we put together a plan that really represented what really needed to happen. Then you watch the plan sort of hover in that $75 million range, and then the 26 to 31 plan starting to dip a little bit, and that's because of the meaningful pause that we're going to take on capital development as we get further into this six-year plan until we have the O&M staffing challenge figured out. So that is more accurately represented here. This is the draft 26 to 31 overview. Simplified this because comparing it to last year versus this year is really not very useful. Comparing the trend year over year within this draft plan is the most useful thing. So what you don't see is 2025. So the 2025 budget is $28 million. And that's because Curtin Creek at 7.5, Harmony at 3, and I think Kevin, I think the Legacy Lands program was at like 12 million or something like that. And then a pretty robust major maintenance budget for 25. And so we have this big bubble that we had to pop, a bunch of stuff that had been sitting around for a really long time not getting done, primarily Curtin Creek. And then we settled back into where I had envisioned us being sort of over the long haul, right around $15 million a year. And then you start to see a trend sort of a trend downward, with that one exception there in 2028 at $16.9 million, and that's because Minnehaha, aka Trillium, Mount Vista, Neighborhood Park, aka Cedar Knolls, and Cougar Creek Woods development in 2028, sort of the last three parks that we would develop, two neighborhood parks, one community park, in this demonstrated in this capital plan. Now, keep in mind, we update this annually. So if we developed a bunch of traction on the sustainable futures conversation and cleared the blocks on fulfill, this just, that changes everything on this capital conversation, and the 27 to 32 plan looks entirely different. That's the beauty of updating it annually. The agony is doing it annually. So the, you know, that last 2031 and $6 million is not very exciting if you're a planning and development person, but it is sort of a reality at this point. No acquisitions, no construction, mostly planning, and mostly maintenance. So I think that's it. Oh, no, schedule. We're here. First review, 5:13. Thanks for taking the time to listen to me. We're going to wrap up the actual document itself here in the coming days, and then we're going to go out to public comment starting on the 19th, and we'll wrap up a public comment period on the 9th. We'll come back to you on the 10th, and present a draft document. We'll have that to you likely before the public comment period closes, so you can review it as a draft, and we can make changes before we go to Planning Commission. This is different than what we did last year. We did not go to Planning Commission. We haven't gone to Planning Commission since I've been here, but it was brought to our attention that we're supposed to do that. And so we will do that. We'll have a hearing with them, or no, a work session with them on the 7th of August. And hearing on the 21st of August, and then we'll get in the council work session and hearing line. They were told us that they wanted us there in October. We were ready last October, and we didn't get there till November, so that's why I put in there October, November. And then it gets adopted, and we do it all over again. So, any questions? Nah, come on. I couldn't have like provided the information that seamlessly.
So on the comment period, so it starts in
19th.
Starts in 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
How is that being publicized? But I didn't know. I didn't know until I heard this.
Yeah, it will put out a public notice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you put that in the paper?
Mm-hmm.
Your social media too.
Yeah, it'll go out on the Facebook, our the Public Works Facebook page, and it's technically on the agenda today, so it was noticed today.
Well, I guess I don't mean that as a criticism. What I mean is human nature being what it is, like a lead up, like, hey, this is coming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that opportunity exists with 6 more days, but.
We have
procrastinators to some extent.
Yeah, we have time. If the Parks Advisory Board feels like there's not enough public comment time, we have the whole month of July. So we could come to you in July, and we could extend push the comment period a week, give our notification process, and open it up a week longer. If you're interested in that, I can tell you, Brandon, that we never get any comments. Maybe three.
Well, how long is the comment period?
30 days.
In the past compared to this?
30 days. That's 4 weeks.
And how is it publicized? But I would guess that people have comments, but they know to make comments, and the ease with which they make the comments is probably influencing the quantity. I mean, I got to believe that there's more than 3 or 4 people out there who are interested in commenting.
There might be more. You just don't know. But one of the things that irked me this morning as I read the paper is they had this great community-funded position to write about public comments on the Endangered Species Act changing the term of habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't even tell you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to do it, but most people don't. So if you were to get that same reporter mm-hmm. and put something in the local paper, mm-hmm. I would suggest you also tell her how people can comment.
So
with a website or whatever, you know, just give instructions.
Put out a press release and we would have a link to
They don't seem to put that in very often, but you can tell them.
Funding page.
Yeah.
Where the capital plan will be posted. It's pretty easy to comment. It's remarkably easy. It's remarkably easy to dial into this meeting and provide comment. And we'll be here twice.
Yeah.
It's not a park project. And so it's not as juicy as a park project. It's sort of a sleepy document.
And it's hard to understand. You have to really sink your teeth into it.
Yeah. And the document itself is really not hard to understand.
Not for you, not for us even at this point.
That's true.
But for a person from the public, even so.
Yeah, yeah.
If you give them a chance, tell them how.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. No, I don't have any issue with stretching it a little bit. Chances are it'll get stretched anyway because of resources. So it's quite possible.
Yeah. Increased publicity and maybe a little more time.
Yeah.
If that's an option.
But it is. I like having slack in my schedule. It's a good strategy. So.
There's a limit, of course. I mean, we helped in my business. We helped some clients respond to the IVR comment period, right? And so we were tuned into that. And that was like 2 months, right? Almost 3 months. Law period, very high publicity. And then still some people later complained that they didn't know about it. So you're never going to please everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Within reason, I guess, you cast the widest net.
So I'll add a week before the public comment period, and I'll add a week to the period. We do SEPA, which is the State Environmental Policy Act document, and put in a notification process for that before we go to the Planning Commission. So there is a legal notice for that before it goes to Planning Commission. So it comes here twice, public meeting. Goes to the Planning Commission twice, public meeting. Goes to Council twice, public meeting. Like 6 public meetings. Plenty of opportunity to comment. We did, the first year I was here, we held a public meeting, a standalone public meeting for the capital plan. Nobody showed up.
I just wanted to make a quick comment because I think it's a really good point that's being brought up. For starters, most people have no idea what a capital improvement plan is. And so when they see those words on a social media post, they don't know what that means. And so I think one thing we can do is to simplify our wording in our social media posts so people know what this is. What this really is your future parks, your future park improvements. And so how we message it, I think, is really important and something we'll look at for this post. What the post could say is something like, please provide input on your future parks and improvements in the system, something like that. And we'll play around with some wording. But that's, I think, one barrier is just the terminology and the acronym we use, CIP.
Great point. We get so wrapped up in like the requirement to notice, and we just put the jargon, we put the planning jargon out there because it's a requirement to notice. And we say, we met the requirement, and we don't really think about how do we get people to really pay attention to the notice. And most people aren't looking at the legal notices section of the newspaper anymore, to be honest with you. It's the press release and hopefully getting somebody to, you know, to pick it up and do an article on it.
Yeah, and this and Parks Advisory Board, this is one really important key function of this board, and that is to keep us accountable and help improve the way we communicate and what we're putting out in the community. So thank you for bringing this up.
Absolutely. So I'm already changing it in my presentation, so I remember. Okay, that's all I have. You don't have any questions?
You do get that next month also.
Yeah, you're going to get sick of me.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was very informative.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yes.
Totally sick of me. That's why Justin's going to do the front half.
So you'll get 62.
I wanted to ask about the past discussion of having liaisons between Parks Advisory Board and the bicycle
transportation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jessica Barksdale is our BPAP.
No, she is our Parks Advisory Board member. Kelsey.
Kelsey.
Kelsey
is the BPAP.
Oh, okay. Kelsey's our BPAP.
I think there's a number of us that made ourselves available to volunteer. Are we on standby waiting to be called upon to go to the meeting, or what does that look like?
Well, ask Harrison to send you an invitation.
Yeah, Harrison.
Husting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then this might be a question for that particular group, but I have input that has been asked. Input from the Philida Neighborhood Association that I've been asked to relay to that group about some issues that they think are relevant to that group. So is that something, for example, that if I get asked or am allowed to that meeting, that's the baby dome?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Kelsey,
do you know anything about, have you heard anything about Harrison having a meeting?
I have not. I do know. So our meetings are the fourth Tuesday of the month. So our next one's May 27th. I can absolutely do some follow up to get you all on the agenda and get the invite. I'm happy to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for having me. This has been interesting.
Anybody else got anything? Mm-hmm.
So. I wanted to at least express appreciation for the rather well-managed groundbreaking out at the East Fork of the Lewis. Is she still around? Yeah. Anyway, Danielle did a really good job, or whoever helped her plan it, and it went off quite well, I thought. So, thank you. A lot of people showed up.
I thought the morning perfect cream was
pretty good. Oh, I have a really cool picture of that if you want me. Oh, I just left the meeting. Too bad. The group picture, did you see the group picture? Here, I'll call that again.
The other thing about that East Fork is the company that was contracted with to do the work. I got a kick out of it. Owned by six brothers, and a couple of them, two or three of them were there.
Yeah.
And I got a chance to chat with one of them, and they take construction company legacy park development projects seriously well. They did a marvelous job of laying out how they were going to do that. So I was just all in all very impressed.
Another thing guys are doing, Creek Creek.
Yep. Ah. Well, they're cool.
Yeah.
They're good.
Oh, she put it in the pinch chat. Oh, no, there it is.
Here's the turnout.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good considering a lot of those guys were hanging in the back and didn't want to move forward.
Yeah.
Which one was this?
That's the East Fork Lewis River reconnection groundbreaking. It's awesome.
Look at the size of that piece of equipment. Yeah. It really is that big.
Right.
Yeah.
Now that bucket's 6 feet tall. The guy is standing.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. Yep. Pretty cool.
All right. Anybody else? 5 minutes early. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for
having me. Have a good meeting.
Thank you.
Yes, and.